All right, well, a good portion of at least, well, this morning and maybe a little bit of this afternoon is kind of devoted to lab-type things like yesterday afternoon was with respect to classification. So we are going to go through Tennessee and earn ID again and then John Locks will be in here after this presentation, and he's going to go over shorebird ID for the ones that you need to know. There's going to be 15 species of anurans. There's a total of 21 in our state, so you only need to know 15. They're on the list that you got yesterday. Shorebird, same thing. There's 15 species, and then after John, I'll give a talk on waterfowl identification. I think there's 22 that that I'm requiring, or we are requiring. Okay. So this should be review, but TAMP was about a month ago, so it is easy to forget these things. All right. So everything in this presentation is fair game, including the orders of Anura that, well, excuse me, the families of Anura that we have in the state of Tennessee. So when we talk about frogs and toads, we're in the order Anura, okay? Salamanders are in Caudata, but we're not going to talk about salamanders, except, well, never mind, yeah. Okay, so order Anura, the Anurans. All right. We have one species, let's see here. They're actually a little out of order. Our toads fall into the family Bufonidae. We have two species of toads, true toads, American and Fowler's toad. We have one species that falls into Pelobatidae, which are the spadefoots. And ours is the eastern spadefoot. Our true frogs are in the family Ranidae. We have several species of ranids. Fourth family we have in our state are the tree frogs, Hylidae. And we have a fair number of those species as well. And then we have one species of microhylid, which are the narrow-mouthed toads, or really more appropriately, they should be called the narrow-mouthed frogs. I think I have the species here. Yeah, we have two true toads, one spadefoot. That should say spadefoots, not American spadefoots. One microhylid. We have 10 tree frogs in our state and 7 true frogs. Again, that should sum up to about 21, or exactly 21. Yeah, it does. And you'll need to know 5 of them. 15 of them, excuse me. All right. Okay, so let's go over some basic morphological characteristics that we see on frogs and toads. Not all of them, but some of them, just so, because we'll be referring to these different structural characteristics on certain species. We often talk about the dorsal lateral folds, which are basically a ridge of skin that runs down the back, whether they're present or they're not present, or the shape of them, if they're interrupted or whatever. So these are called dorsal lateral folds. Okay, and here you can see, here's a picture of one that would not have any folds, which some species don't. Actually, a lot of species don't have dorsal lateral folds. For the toads, if you ever picked up a toad, you can tell it has very rough skin. Folks call those warts. They're actually glands. And more specifically, these warts that you see are what are called glandular glands that secrete toxins. The parotoid glands, which are up near the front of the head, are just glandular glands or a bunch of warts that are congregated that result in a more concentrated, localized release of toxins which are used for predatory defense. Some bufonids have toxic enough poison, toxins, to kill small dogs. The Sonoran toad is one of those out in Arizona. The other feature that we see with some toads are what are called cranial crests here, which are actually raised ridges. They're actually bone that are between the eyes and between the eyes. And so we'll talk about we'll refer to those for our two toad species and how the paratoid glands are related to the cranial crest, actually. It's an identifying characteristic for those. And then, of course, frogs have a variety of feet shapes and depending on their adaptations. Our toads are more of a shovel spatula type foot. It's very sturdy for digging. They dig with their hind legs and back into the ground backwards, and they'll burrow down in and create burrows for themselves. They have spade-like tubercles that are on there, actually like right there, that are used for digging. Tree frogs have very large toe pads to help them grab onto things. Even our smaller tree frogs in the family Hylidae have toe pads, but they're not as distinct. In fact, I have a tree frog, a couple tree frogs that I collected last night that I'll pass around, y'all can identify. The true frogs, which are ranids, are more aquatic, are associated with more permanent aquatic habitats and have very extensive webbing for the most part and for swimming in those aquatic environments and escaping predators and collecting and catching prey items. Okay? So, basic morphology of morphological characteristic of anurans. Good? All right. Again, if you like this type of stuff, I'd recommend taking amphibian ecology next spring. All right. Oh, yeah. I guess I had little things on here.
No way to kill that speaker, huh?
Yep, there is. But I'm going to be using it here in a second. So, yeah. Okay, our first toad, American toads, Bufo americanus. When you look at that toad, what jumps out at you? What are some morphological characteristics? Stripe down the back. Yes. Although that stripe, you'll also see that often generally more pronounced in Fowler's toad. So that definitely jumps out. There's no doubt, but that doesn't distinguish it between Fowler's, unfortunately. Yeah, you have your dark spots here. You have these big glands. And as you may remember from TAMP, that's one of the characteristics, the number of warts per dark spot. For the American toad, there are fewer. There's usually only one or two of these large warts per dark spot. When I give you a picture, you will be able to see that, okay? I won't be unfair with respect to pictures that you see. The other thing that are the paratoid glands, which are a little more challenging to see here. Here are the paratoid glands right there, okay? Here's the cranial crest coming down, all right? And notice that with Bufo americanus, there is space between the paratoid glands and the cranial crest, okay? Now, in some individuals, it may actually come up and touch right at the end of the cranial crest. There is a spur. It may come up and just touch that, but that is quite different than Fowler's toad, which will actually, the paratoid glands will come up and touch the entire cranial crest, okay? So I think I have a picture illustrating that there. Okay, so the parotid glands rarely touch the cranial crest for American toads. Okay? And again, these presentations are online as well, just like all the other ones. They're underneath of lab resources. All right, so there you go. Now, the other characteristic, which we just mentioned, are just a few warts or glandular glands per dark spot. You'll see more with Fowler's toad. These are breeding season is early. We'll start hearing American toads pretty soon here. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised with that nice, warm, soaking rain. I mean, if you were out last night, frogs are calling all over the place. And in fact, our early breeders like southeastern chorus frogs, spring peepers, which will breed in January. I heard them in January, but it was so darn cold late January through February, there's no breeding. And now you have a lot of species out there breeding simultaneously where a lot of times there wouldn't be a whole lot of overlap. So anyways, we'll start picking up American toads here pretty soon. Let's see here. Oh, one characteristic, this is just kind of a little trivia thing. So if you've ever seen toad eggs in a pond, they're these black eggs. In fact, they lay over 10,000 eggs. A lot of the individuals do. And they're just strings. And really the way those strings are made is as the female is laying them, and the male is actually behind her amplex, they are walking through the water, and they're actually leaving these eggs out in strings. And for American toad, one characteristic between their egg masses and Fowler's toad, they look identical, although typically American toads, for some reason, the females walk over a farther distance than females of Fowler's toads. So usually if you can actually see these eggs, which they often get covered with sediment pretty quick, but if you see them and it's spread out over 10 meters of a distance, one particular egg mass, then it's a pretty good characteristic, a pretty good sign that's American toad. Fowler's toad is more constricted, less than 5 meters. Okay, so the breeding call is a long musical trill. Yep, and that was it on that slide. Okay, so it's a long musical trill. Yeah, I have a couple different things I'm doing. Okay, so that's the American toad. A nice long musical trill, okay? Now for 10 of our species, I also have some video because I think it helps. If you can actually see these organisms calling, because it to me, if you see them calling and then you hear it too, it kind of puts two different senses, so to speak, together, and helps you imagine when you just hear the call, imagine the organism out there. So let's take a look here. What are those in the background? Peepers are back there, and what else? I don't know, is there a southern leopard? There's also some southeastern chorus frogs. There may have been a southern leopard, I didn't hear that one. Okay. All right. Like what? No. Breeding season is FYI. You just need to be able to identify these. By both, sight and call. Yeah. All right, our second toad species is the Fowler's toad. John, it'll probably be about an hour before I'm done, so if you want to hang out and listen to frog ID, you can, but if you have things to do. Okay. Our second toad species is the Fowler's toad. And again, we've already talked about some of the characteristics here when we're talking about American toad. For the Fowler's toad, the paratoid glands touch the cranial crest. Okay, so again, it's a little bit challenging to see in this photo here, but this diagram illustrates it pretty clearly. right there. The other characteristic that Fowler's toads have is that they have more than three or more glandular glands per dark spots. So you see a bunch of glands here per dark spot. Okay, they breed generally a little bit later than the American toads, a little bit later in spring and May. And again, as I mentioned before, usually Fowler's toads, the females, they lay their eggs over a shorter distance than the American toads, so their egg masses are, the strings of their eggs are more constricted, usually less than 3 meters. All right, the call is a nasal wah, wah. All right, so Fowler's toad. Oops. One more here. Different recording here. Fowler's toad. Yeah, it was dinner there. Get him. There you go. Cool stuff. All right. All right. All right. The next species, the Eastern Spadefoot. Some taxonomists have broken these out of the American spade, the spadefoots that we have in the United States, which are four species. They've broken them. Some have broken them out of Pelobatidae, and have put them into a new family, Scaphiopopidae. Anyways, I just put that up there, just kind of FYI. most folks that I talk to and that I know is still you have them in Pella Bad today. But anyways, that's kind of taxonomous. They're always changing things. Okay, so what jumps out with you when you're looking at that organism? Eastern spadefoot. Yeah, you have these, they have glandular glands as well, and they're usually pigmented in red. And then, yes, that vertical pupil right there. They are our only species in Tennessee that has a vertical pupil. In fact, the spadefoots are the only genera, Scaptheopus, as well as Spia. There are two genera in the United States that have a vertical pupil. There are other species worldwide that have vertical pupils, but these are the only in the States. Okay? Okay, yes, they have lots of glandular glands here to excrete poisons, but they do not have any parotid glands. They do have a toad-like appearance, and but they're not in Buffonidae. In fact, some people call them spadefoot toads. Don't call them spadefoot toads. Call them spadefoots, period. Okay? All right, they have as well, the toads do have this as well, the bufos. It's called a metatarsal tubercle. It's a spade right there. You kind of see this one's crescent shape, and actually crescent shape is Couch's spadefoot, but which is out in the Southwest, but ours is similar, and it has a spade. And again, they are very efficient diggers. I wish I had some of these. When I was doing research in Texas, I had a bunch that I just kept in a terrarium, and man, they are awesome to watch. If you put them in soil like this, they are gone in seconds. I mean, they dig very quickly, assuming that the soil is relatively loose. But they're very efficient diggers. In general, spadefoots are a group of frogs that are highly adapted to dry conditions. You find these, now this is not, ours is probably, the eastern spadefoot is the least xeric of a species compared to the other spadefoots, but just in general, spadefoots are found in very dry areas like the desert Southwest. They have an explosive breeding behavior. Ours do too here, where they come out only for a short period of time during the summer, during intense rains, and they come down, they breed very quickly. Most spadefoots, they're done breeding within a couple days, and their larvae develop within a couple weeks and metamorphose. They are definitely the outlier when it comes to rapid development. And again, from an evolutionary standpoint, where these things have evolved, it's generally been in drier climates where, water sources are around for a very short period of time. So the Couch's spadefoot is the most dry adapted. In fact, they only need to... there's been some physiology studies done. They only need to eat 3 times per year. It's pretty amazing. Yeah?
You said that they only eat 3 times
per year? Well, I mean, I guess probably a better question would be, what type of ecological influence do they have? They can have a pretty big ecological influence because they come out in the thousands. And so they're out for a very short period of time, and they're in very high densities, and especially holes in their metamorphs. They're often, again, exploiting these ephemeral ponds with no fish. You can have densities up around 700 tadpoles per meter squared. And so, yeah, they can be pretty significant, even though they're around for a very short period of time. Yeah, they also, from a predatory standpoint, things during that period of time, nothing specializes on eating spadefoot. They're only around for a short period of time, but there is the environment, the terrestrial environment, is inundated, as well as the aquatic environment, with these organisms. So these are breeding in summer, June and July, and there's been a lot of research that have gone in that has been associated with spadefoots. They just don't kind of wake up and come out of the ground. They really need intense changes in barometric pressure, intense thunderstorms. The sound of thunder has also been linked to them emerging. So once they come out of the ground the first time, they will stay they'll dig down, they'll stay relatively shallow. But when they dig down for basically long durations, they may go down to a meter in depth. Okay, so they come out during thunderstorms. All right, breeding call. They sound like a bunch of crows. Nasal grunts. They sound like that's the best way, in my opinion, kind of describe them. Let's see here. Here's a different, this is a pretty good one here. Oh, I don't have that one. This is often how you hear them. It's very rare that you hear one spade foot out there or just a couple, because again, they are explosive breeders. They all come out at the same time. They breed very quickly. It's pandemonium, really. No territoriality, no territory set up like we have with our longer breeding species like bullfrogs and green frogs. Okay, Eastern narrow-mouthed toad. Or Eastern narrow-mouthed frog, as I would prefer, but a lot of folks put toad on the end. Gastrophrenia caroliniensis. All right, what is looks pretty unique about that organism? Yeah, very small head, looks, and hence the name, narrow-mouthed. Looks like it has a narrow mouth. Actually, the mouth is pretty large, but it looks like it definitely has an angular head here. What else? Yeah, just a rotund body, isn't it? All microhylids are like that. They have this fat, rotund body. In fact, there's one species or genus, Breviceps, that they're so rotund they can't even implex. So the male actually secretes some mucus that is very, very sticky, and he sticks himself to the back of the female. Anyways, pretty funny. Okay, so they have a pointed snout, short limbs, plump body. They're very diagnostic, and they also have this fold of skin between the eyes, and as you may remember from TAMP, Bob saying that these guys like to specialize in eating ants. They really will eat anything that's small, but that has been noted in the literature, and it's thought that that fold of skin can kind of help protect them from ants getting in their eyes. I don't know. Anyways, that's a hypothesis. I don't know about that. What's that? Right. I think individually, if you put a fire ant in with a narrow mouth toad, it would eat it. But if they got near, a mound, they would be in trouble. For neurons, they pretty much eat anything that they can fit in their mouth, assuming they can see it. So our larger neurons won't eat really small things because they just don't have that search image. They need to see things larger. The other thing about neurons is that they need that movement stimulus. Just like we saw that Fowler's toad or American toad capture that, I think it was a stink bug. You can actually have an insect there that is not moving and they will not see it. They need that movement stimulus. Okay, so these guys are out there with the spade foots often, breeding during intense rains or after intense rains during the summer. And very diagnostic call. Nothing sounds like this. It's a very high buzz. Well, I'll take that back. Some folks do confuse this with American toad, but they sound quite different. In fact, I'll play them together. In fact, here's the American toad again, just real quick, just to make a mental note. That's the American toad. Long, long trill. This is a much shorter call, and it's a buzz, like eek. Oh, damn, that's a spade fly. My bad. Yeah. Yeah, here we go. So, I mean, to me that sounds very different, but actually in testing folks in amphibian ecology, several folks made that mistake. And it was always that. Folks were putting down, switching American toad and Eastern narrowmouth. So just, yeah, something just FYI, make sure you train your ear. Let's see, is that the, that's the only recording I have, but I do have video. Okay. These are a small organism too. I mean, think of the toads, you know, being larger, having that large vocal sac, being a call for a longer period of time. These guys are a lot smaller. That is exactly how they call. Can you see how he's looking straight up? They sit in the water like that. And I'm telling you, they are hard to see. You can be standing right over them and can't even see the darn things, and they're calling right between your legs. Like, where in the heck are they? They are a little bit larger. They're about that big. And they're more plump. Actually, you know what? I think I have a preserved specimen. I'll bring it down. You can take a look. Okay. Let's see, what are we doing here? All right. Next species. All right, now we're in our tree frogs. Okay. Family Hylidae, we have 10 species. This is the northern cricket frog, Acarus crepitans, or Acarus crepitans. What jumps out at you? Yeah. Unfortunately, the northern cricket frog and the southern cricket frog, they both have these stripes, and you know what? Sometimes they don't even have them. So that's one thing that is great if they have the stripe. And in general, between the northern and the southern cricket frog, if they have that stripe, the northern cricket frog is I think it's more sloppy and it's less distinct. It kind of fades out more. You'll see with the southern cricket frog, it's more narrow and it's more confined, more exact. Those edges are more delineated. Okay, now the other. So the other that's one thing that we see here in that dark triangle between the eyes. The other thing is the webbing on the toe, which a lot of times you can't always see, but with the, I think Pandy said that you can actually see it with binoculars. well, that's amazing if you can do that. I'm sure you can if you could just happens to be like positioned just like that for you, but most of the time you don't see their hind legs if they're off in a distance. If you can get them in hand, you can. So anyways, they have their longest middle toe here. You look at the webbing and it is at least, the webbing goes at least halfway up that middle toe or more, okay? And it's less than that for just a little bit of webbing for the southern cricket frog. Okay? Their calls are quite different, though. Okay, these guys are breeding in late spring into summer. And their call is very diagnostic. Sounds like two metal balls clicking together, that Geiger counter. Okay, and the important thing with respect to telling the difference between it and a southern cricket frog is that they have a longer call than southern cricket frog, and the tempo changes. It starts slow, and then it gets faster, and it slows back down. And I think that when you see the video, that'll really it illustrates it very well. Notice how every call, it's taking a breath in. In amphibian ecology, we talk about the energetics of calling behavior, and it is intense. Males spend a tremendous amount of energy calling in a given night. In fact, it has been equated to us running a marathon every single day. We'll actually talk about how many kilojoules of energy they expend per night. No, you just need to know how to identify these. All right. Next species of tree frog. Where did do you guys have to know southern cricket? Did I put southern cricket on there? Oh, I didn't. Oh, well, I guess then that's pretty easy then. They're only located, I guess the reason is because they're only located in southwestern Tennessee. They don't have a very large geographic distribution. Although, you go south of us and there are a lot of southern cricket frogs. In fact, there's a very good chance we'll see some and hear some down in Mississippi. Yeah, so you guys got lucky there. All right. So the green tree frog, this is also found in western Tennessee, although it is expanding into middle Tennessee, found throughout south of us, throughout Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and down into Florida. What jumps out with you with respect to it? Yeah, that nice white medial stripe that comes down, very distinct down the side. That is similar to the barking tree frog, which actually I don't think you have to know in this class. You have to know in amphibians, though. The barking tree frog will have a stripe, but usually it's interrupted or it just ends, and it doesn't go all the way mid-laterally down the body. And also the difference between it and the skin itself here is nice and smooth, and it's much more granulated with a barking tree frog. That's right. That's right. Okay. So, The other thing is that these guys are always green, nice smooth back and belly. The barking tree frog changes colors. They can actually even be grayish, and they can have mottling on the back and spots. But at times, they can look very similar to these guys. Again, you don't have to know the barking tree frog. All right, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so these guys are breeding in summer. And a very, very distinct call sounds like a bicycle horn. I used to have one of those bicycle horns on my bike when I was a kid. Squeezed it. Yep. That was cool, man. I don't know what happened. What can you hear in the background there? Oh, there's a lot of different things. Cricket frogs. Species we haven't talked about yet in the back. Green frogs, yeah. I don't think I have green. Oh, I do have green tree frog. All right. I don't remember what this video looks like, honestly. Green frog, green tree frog. And the thunder rolls. Who's that? Really doing that. I'm guessing that is earlier in the year. It's a little bit colder. One thing we talk about amphibians is how the calling rate will change through a year, even with a species. It'll be much slower. Even like with spring peepers, they call much faster later in the year. So, anyways, that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and they'll do a trill even. You're right, yeah. Okay. We have two species of gray tree frogs. One is the Cope's gray tree frog, Hyla chrysocellus, excuse me. And then we have Hyla versicolor, which I may have on the next slide. I'm only going to show you the Cope's gray tree frog and give you the recording for it. They look identical with respect to morphological characteristics. Let's see here. So they're gray, but they can be a greenish color. So even though they're called gray tree frogs, depending on the habitat they're in, they could be more of a green color. And they have some type of model, but they have mottling on their back, so they're quite different than like the gray green tree frog. The big characteristic for them is that they have these flat yellow to orangish flash colors underneath of the legs, hind legs here. You can see it there, you can see it there. And that helps distinguish them from other species. And I think they mentioned in TAMP about flash colors. It's just, again, one of those things that hopefully they can escape predators. It's something that startles the predator real quick, just for a short period of time. When they jump, maybe they can get away. So, let's see. These guys are breeding late spring into summer. And they're highly arboreal. Staying in the forest canopy pretty much most of the year, coming down to forest ponds and emergent wetlands to only to breed. In fact, they will call for a lot of times from the trees and then come down just prior to amplexing with the female. All right, they have a short raspy trill. It's faster than a versicolor with respect to the number of pulses per second. And they also have half the chromosomes of versicolor. So you can tell the difference in these by analyzing their call. It is difficult to hear the difference, so it's best to analyze it with some software that's out there, and also genetically you can tell the difference. So Cope's gray tree frog. It's a trill. It's really fast trill. It's much slower with the gray tree frog. Actually, I think, do I have another slide on the? Yeah, I do. So, anyways, same characteristics with respect to morphology here, breeding season, blah, 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 except that the trill is a little bit slower. Again, you don't need to know the difference, and they have twice the chromosomes of the copes. Here's the gray tree frog. See how much slower that is? The thing that confounds this, and it's a little bit challenging, is it does depend on temperature. So as it warms, the gray tree frog sounds more like copes, and as it cools, the copes sounds more like gray tree frogs.
How can they have twice the chromosomes and look exactly the same?
Well, they're obviously not, those genes that are involved with those chromosomes have nothing to do with their outward phenotype. I'm not quite sure. That's a good question though. I don't know the background or the hypotheses behind the genetics actually. Yeah, good question, but I don't know. I don't know what those extra chromosomes function to do, if they do function a whole lot. Okay, let's see if I don't know if I have any video on them. I don't think I do. I do have it on the gray, I think on the gray, but not the copes. Y'all want to see the gray? Just to get a feeling for what it looks like. I think I have gray. Yeah, gray tree frog. So slower call here. See this one, how green this one is? That's one breath, that's correct. So some species, they just take one breath and they reverberate it through their vocal sac. In fact, the toads do that as well. They're taking one deep breath and resonating it through their vocal sac. Then they let the air out through their nares. Okay. All right. Moving right along, spring peepers. There you go. What's noticeable morphologically?
His X on his back.
Yeah, the sort of an X that sometimes sort of exists. There, it's nice and prominent. But here's a great example. It's not always nice and distinct. And a lot of times, depending on where they won't have any modeling. They can be almost completely just paint color. But yes, that is a cross, hence their species name, Crucifer, Pseudacris crucifer. Dark cross on the back here. And a lot of times you do see that. Okay. Crucifer means cross bearer. Light brown, smooth skin, almost a pinkish color, dark line between the eyes that you see right there. Okay. These are early breeders that are out there breeding right now, although I didn't hear any last night, but that was just probably because they weren't where I was looking, that's all. I definitely am sure they're out there with the chorus frogs. All right, they have a distinct peep that y'all are probably pretty familiar with. It's a bunch of them. Oh, what's that? All right, golly. There's another call. I'll just let them play in the background. Waiting to hear our frogs over there call. Right. Nathan brought up a good point about that, you know, what we're actually listening to are what are called advertisement calls. They are the breeding calls. Frogs have several different types of calls, and even there are several different types of breeding calls. One call that he talked about is an aggression call, and actually this is a pretty good illustration for peepers of the aggression call that they will give out. It's also called the encounter call when one male gets too close to another male. He's pissed. Like, hey. He's like, oh, what's going on? Sorry, bud. I'm out of here. anyways, pretty cool stuff. All right, on to our chorus frogs, which you have to know two of them. The first is the mountain chorus frog. Again, we're still in the tree frog family here. Mountain chorus frogs, Pseudacris brachyphona. And what's distinct here? Yeah. That is a distinct characteristic. You see that dark stripe, and especially this mask behind the eye. Now, there's only really one other species that has that nice dark mask like that, and that is the wood frog, which is a rannid, which is probably five times the size of this guy. Well, yeah, probably. The other thing is, I think that's, there we go, right there. The other thing is there is modeling on the back here, and they talk about the modeling forming backward parentheses, which may or may not exist, quite frankly. Sometimes they have those backward parentheses. Other times it's just modeling and it really doesn't have any nice distinct form to it. So, really the only thing that kind of looks like this, that has that mask, there is the wood frog, but these are tiny guys. These are the size of these guys here, which are not mountain chorus frogs, but they're small. Wood frogs are big, they're like, well, not as big as a green frog, but pretty darn close. They're big frogs. They're ranids with the big webbed feet. These are tree frogs, little toe pads on them. Okay. So these guys are breeding relatively early and up in high elevation. I don't know if I probably don't have that. You generally only find these up in the high elevations of the Cumberland Plateau and along the escarpments of the Cumberland Plateau and the Cumberland Mountains. It's actually, I don't know if they've been found at lower than 1,000 feet or 1,000 meters elevation. I think it's 1,000 meters and above. So 3,000 feet and above. So they're at higher elevations compared to the southeastern chorus frog, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. Okay, so they have a short raspy call that rises in pitch. Okay, it's like running your finger over a comb, but it's shorter than the southeastern chorus frog, which is the next one, and it's also much duller than the southeastern chorus frog, which is right there. Okay, so let's listen to the mountain chorus frog first. Again, they're taking breaths. Okay, and I'm just right now going to play the southeastern so you can hear it right next to each other, and then I'll play the southeastern again. That really sounds like running your finger over a comb. So that's the southeastern chorus frog. And actually, the subspecies we have here is the upland chorus frog. So that's pretty different than that there. Almost sounds like a gray tree frog more than the southeastern. Except that gray tree frog is more of a trill. Okay. So that's the mountain chorus. I don't have a picture of that or a video of that. Do I have southeastern? I guess I don't have southeastern either. Okay. So here's the southeastern chorus frog. Characteristics are, what jumps out at you? The three stripes, right. And the triangle between the head. Now, I will say again that these three stripes that you see may not be very apparent sometimes. In fact, they can almost be completely absent, and at other times they're dark, even within an individual, just depending on the environment that they're in. And they often aren't nice, continuous lines. They're often broken. So that is a characteristic that is diagnostic of them. And what was the old name? Triseriata for the three lines. Pseudacris ferrierum. All right, dark triangle between the eyes, right there. These guys are our earliest breeders in Tennessee. Okay, and again, we just listened to that comb-like call, running your fingers over a comb. It's very diagnostic, and they're breeding right now. They're all over the place. Okay. That's what these guys are. Pass them around. It's actually a male and a female. This morning they were implexed. I might just leave them in there and see if I get some eggs. I'll raise some tadpoles.
So that one is slower than the other one? Pretty far,
Yeah, they almost just sound completely different because that's your southeastern chorus, mountain chorus, that's the mountain chorus. So you can... It almost is faster. I think I said slower before. The thing is you can really hear the distinct kind of with the southeastern, and it's really, I guess it's really faster if you think about it, if you want to think about it in the same context with the mountain. Okay. Yeah, that's a good thing. It's more metallic too, the southeastern. It's like okay. All right. Oh, that's a good point. Again, this is just from observation with the amphibians class. Some folks did get the southeastern chorus frogs confused with gray tree frogs. But the thing about southeast is that call is rising. In gray tree frogs, it's constant. It's best a lot of times if you just create your own notes and images in your head. But all right. So what's the story with this whole southeastern chorus frog? There are two subspecies here. What we have here, and actually throughout the southeastern United States, is the upland chorus frog, Ferriarum. And then there's the New Jersey chorus frog up here, just in this location of Maryland, and I guess maybe it goes, yeah, there's Jersey right there, yeah. Then we have the western chorus frog through the Midwest, and then the boreal chorus frog up into Canada and through our western United States, Rocky Mountain area. Okay, we're on to the ranids. Yeah, Rana catspiana, the American bullfrog. That's the other thing. As I mentioned before, you only have to know the common name, but you need to put American bullfrog, just not bullfrog. Characteristics, okay, these guys can be they can be solid green, they can be more brown like this guy here. The important thing, you remember the dorsal lateral folds? Okay, there's the dorsal lateral fold starting right behind the eye, and notice that it wraps around the tympanum. That's the eardrum of the frog, okay, wraps around the tympanum. It does not run down the back. And that's going to be the difference between it and the green frog, which can look very similar, although in general, bullfrogs are larger than green frogs, okay? So that's what you're looking for, that characteristic. And that characteristic is apparent even right at metamorphosis. I mean, the metamorphs have those two characteristics, okay? The other thing that they may or may not have mentioned at TAMP is for green frogs and for bullfrogs, you can look at the size of the tympanum and make a decision of whether it's a male or a female. If the tympanum is about the same size as the eye, it's a female. If it's distinctly larger than the eye, it's a male. So what would you think there? Female, exactly. Female. Okay. And again, these are late breeders, summer breeders. I think Bob mentioned that they have this kind of predator-type defense where if you grab a hold of them, they'll just collapse. They'll kind of go paralyzed, and you'll think the thing's dead. You'll set it down, and then immediately, boom, it jumps. And these guys can hop a good over a meter per hop, so they can be gone very quick. All right, this is everybody's heard the bullfrog before. More than likely. Yeah. And very diagnostic call. Okay. I do have video of it. Again, it's pretty neat to kind of see these things calling. A lot of times it is, oops. Not so much with bullfrogs, but with a lot of the species, it's hard to see them when they're out there calling, and it's just a challenge to see them calling, ultimately. This is pretty neat video. What's that? Green frog. The next species we'll talk about. have what are called bilateral subgular vocal sacs. It's actually two vocal sacs that are divided at the center partially that they're blowing air through. Okay? And there are actually three types of vocal sacs, but that's the kind that they have. That is correct. The males are the callers. They're sitting out there and the females are coming to them. That is pretty much the extent of the courtship of an urens. There isn't a whole lot. Once the female gets there and she chooses the male, they pretty much go straight into amplexus. Whoa. All right, next ranid, the green frog, Rana clamatans. Usually a little bit smaller than the bullfrog, but again, bullfrogs can be the same size, and there's a lot of variability within the species. Okay, what jumps out at you? Yeah, see that fold now? That fold, that dorsal lateral fold goes all the way down. And sometimes it's not real prominent. See, but you can see that it goes past the tympanum. It definitely isn't wrapping around. And here's a metamorph example. See, right even at metamorphosis, that characteristic is present. All right? So the other thing that is a characteristic of green frogs is that they'll have their tympanum, the center of their tympanum is raised, which is not a characteristic of bullfrogs. And so, same character thing about males and females here. What would you call that? That's a male. Yep. All right. Again, they're breeding during the summer, and they have, we've already heard them several times in other recordings. They have that clunk type call, like a banjo string. All right. So, green frog video. Generally breeding in more permanent ponds, although they will breed in ephemeral ponds. There's that raised tympanum. Okay. All right. A little bit smaller frog is the pickerel frog, Rana palustris. What's noticeable on this frog? Yeah, the very blocky spots that are paired going down the back. Okay. It's a diagnostic characteristic compared to the southern leopard frog, which will have spots on the back, but they will be irregularly shaped and not in any certain pattern. Okay? Also, with the southern leopard frog, they have a spot on their tympanum, and the pickerel frog does not. All right, these guys are breeding mid-spring. And they have a descending snore. Sounds to me like it's opening a creaky door. Did I hit on that? No.
I don't have a video of them.
What do you hear in the background? Yeah, peepers. Yep. Yeah. Kind of a snore. There are several other species, two other species in our state that have a snore, but you don't need to know them for the test. Okay. The crawfish frog and the gopher frog, but actually the gopher frog has only been found just once in Tennessee, in Middle Tennessee, south of Nashville. Okay, the next one, which is similar with respect to kind of morphological characteristics, is the southern leopard frog. And again, that characteristic of that white spot in the tympanum is diagnostic between them and the pickerel frog. And actually, between the southern leopard frog and the northern leopard frog, the northern leopard frog won't have that spot, but they'll have the irregular shaped spots on the back. It won't be paired like the pickerel frog. Okay, these guys can actually be even a green color. Okay, in fact, if you go by 201 upstairs, there's an article with some of my students. There's a green southern leopard frog they're holding on to. All right, their call is like a series of clucks or chuckles, and then you'll have this particular species has a variety of calls, very complex callers, but a series of clucks or chuckles, and then you'll hear this kind of groans that are similar to rubbing your hand over a balloon, which is very diagnostic. That's the rubbing your hands over a balloon. And they do sound a little bit similar to the wood frog, but the wood frog doesn't have that rubbing your hands over the balloon. All right. We're talking about right now? Oh, those are southeastern chorus frogs. They're called bilateral vocal sacs. Our last frog you need to know, the wood frog, Rana sylvatica. And what do you notice? Yep, that dark mask, okay? Right there. Now, the only thing that really has that is the mountain chorus frog, but again, quite different in size. This has a very ranid type appearance. Look at the webbing here. Nice developed, long, powerful legs, as opposed to a tree frog that's much smaller. Mountain chorus is the size of the southeastern chorus. Okay? And they also, they have a white upper lip as well. Okay, breeding season is early. In fact, where they're breeding, they're out there already. Often overlap with the spring peepers. and the southeastern chorus frogs. And these guys are primarily, hence the name, wood frog, primarily breeding in forested wetlands. And they'll be out there right after the ice is gone. One just side note is that one unique thing about their embryos is that they have bicolored embryos. So if you look from above, they're black. If you look from below, they're white. They have a series of clucks or chuckles similar to the southern leopard frog, except if you've ever heard a mallard do a food chuckle when they're eating, it sounds much similar. It sounds very similar to that, and they don't have the rubbing in the hands over the balloon. That's the grunts that they do. What's that? Which one? Southeastern? Okay, pretty exciting, huh? Woohoo! Okay. This is something you can just look over. Again, you don't need to know this, but again, as I mentioned, we're starting with our most earliest breeders, the southeastern chorus frogs. Then we have the wood frogs, spring peepers, the gopher frog is an early breeder that we didn't talk about. Going into March, we end up picking up American toads, southern leopard frogs, crawfish frogs, April, pickerel frogs, and mountain chorus. May, getting into late spring, early summer, we have our Fowler's toad, northern cricket, and our both of the gray tree frogs, and also bird voice tree frog, which we didn't talk about. And then in the summer, we have a variety of species, our long breeders, green frogs, and or I should say our extended breeders. Green frogs and American bullfrogs, our cricket, southern cricket frog, which you don't need to know. And as I mentioned, the explosive breeders, the eastern narrow-mouthed and the eastern spadefoot, and also the green tree frog and the barking tree frog. Okay? So that kind of gives. Now, during August through December, as you might remember, Bob talking about all. The majority of these species will occasionally, some of the males will go out and they will call and there will be some breeding, but it is very little, okay? Primarily because most of the tadpoles of these species are not adapted to overwinter in a pond. The two species that most commonly overwinter in Tennessee are the green frog and the American bullfrog. Although, occasionally some others will. Okay? The southern leopard frog is one that you commonly hear in the fall. And there are a bunch of sites. These sites are, at least these two sites are on our website that you can link to practice your calls. I would download calls and practice them as you're sitting in here in between breaks, etc. Leaps is the a consulting firm that Bob and Pandy own, and then TWRA has a good website. This is a pretty good website as well. And the other website that you may want to just write down are where all these videos came from. It's www.midwestfrogs.com. And there are a lot of other neat videos to watch. When you take amphibians, you know, they talk about different types of calls and things like that. I'll have videos of those things. But it's a really, really kind of a neat website. Okay, take out a piece of paper, pop quiz.